to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
We have interviewed numerous journalists on this show to highlight the importance of a trusted, independent media to sustain democracy. Nonprofit news entities, in particular, have begun to play a vital role in many communities. The Kentucky Lantern is one such news outlet. Launched in November 2022 as part of the nationwide State Newsroom Initiative, the Kentucky Lantern seeks to use its reporting to build a fairer, healthier Kentucky for all. Here to discuss the Kentucky Lantern is its editor-in-chief, Jamie Luke. Luke has more than 40 years of experience as a journalist in four states, with most of her career focusing on her native state of Kentucky. In 2012, Luke received the Scripps Howard Foundation's Walker Stone Award for her editorials in the Lexington Herald Leader. Jamie, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So tell us about the origin of the Kentucky Lantern. How did this all start?
Well, as you said, we're part of a national organization, a nonprofit journalism organization called State Newsroom that's based in Chapel Hill. And it launched in 2018 with the goal of filling in gaps in coverage of state government and state policy in particular. The shrinkage of the newspaper industry and of television coverage of government was the catalyst. And I believe the founders of State's Newsroom also realized how critical an informed public is to a democracy, as you pointed out. And fortunately, some foundations also saw an informed public with access to independent, solid, accurate journalism as critical to democracy. And we receive funding from foundations. We also fundraise from our readers.
So tell us a little bit more about kind of what that news hole was in Kentucky that you saw that is kind of the void you're filling now.
Well, you know, I think in some ways Kentucky has been luckier than some other states in terms of newspapers continuing to do good work to thrive. But there are news deserts in Kentucky, and one of them is the Capitol. I remember when I was a reporter in the 80s and early 90s, and all the reporters who covered legislative sessions had a tradition of gathering for a photograph at the end of the session, and there would be 50 or more of us. We filled up the whole front of the House of Representatives, and now when that photograph's taken, they're lucky to have a dozen reporters
wow.
in it. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the start of Kentucky Lantern. You know, the early days, what sorts of things were you reporting on? What was the most surprising thing about starting a new news organization?
Well, I mean, everything was surprising to me. I had always been a reporter and an editorial writer. I had never really managed anything. So, of course, I had personal growth ahead, which has been very rewarding. It was a great launch because immediately we felt so welcome. We realized that we were filling a need. Readers were very enthusiastic about having an outlet doing the kind of reporting we do, which is we're really interested in policy, but the best policy stories are the ones that really make vivid how policy affects people where they live. So, I mean, we started off the first anniversary of the horrible tornadoes that ripped through western Kentucky. And it was, you know, like 6 months after the horrendous flood that wiped out so much of eastern Kentucky. So we started some of our first stories. We're going back and revisiting the people who had been affected by that, the communities, looking at the rebuilding efforts and how far they had to go.
Mm-hmm. And you've broken some pretty big stories out of Frankfort in contributing to kind of government transparency. Tell us about kind of a big story that you all have broken that really changed perhaps the trajectory of Kentucky's democracy or political landscape.
Well, I don't know how much change this has caused, but we did Tom Loftus, who is a veteran Kentucky journalist and writes as a freelancer for The Lantern and has been a tremendous resource to us. He's a veteran of the Courier Journal in Louisville, is just an ace on campaign finance. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult thing to cover. The data's there. Candidates and PACs and organizations have to file information about who they're giving to and how much, but it's not easy to comb through those records and figure that out. And he discovered a very interesting group of donors with a lot in common who had given to Governor Andy Beshear's campaign for reelection and to the state Democratic Party. And as that story sort of evolved, it became clear, it was discovered by the campaign that scores of contributions, ostensibly from individuals, had all been paid for on one credit card, which belonged to the mayor of London. Mm-hmm. That would be London in Laurel County, not Great Britain. And that's under investigation and has been for years now. Whether anything will ever come of that, I can't say. But that's an old Kentucky tradition that in this case was writ large, that someone with a lot of money gets that money into a campaign via straw donors. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, we'll see if the story has legs and if there's anything there as the investigation goes on. But it's important. I mean, these things don't get exposed without an independent media to look at that kind of transparency.
And I should say, to Loftus, this was quite a thrill. We weren't 6 weeks old, and he called me one morning and said, Pfizer has just given $1 million to the Republican Party of Kentucky, and this was to help refurbish and expand the party headquarters. The legislature a few years back created a special category of political committee for party building funds. Mm-hmm. Corporations can't give politically in Kentucky, except in this one case, the party building fund. So the building, the Republican Party headquarters, is called the Mitch McConnell Building. And quite by coincidence, corporate contributions just poured in. Special interests who have business in Washington before Congress and Frankfurt before the legislature have given generously more than $4 million now. And the expansion is pretty much complete.
And these two stories show us how, you know, the transparency in the reporting on an issue like campaign finance goes to both parties, right? That you know, this is a nonpartisan, independent news organization that's looking to increase transparency regardless of the political party doing it. And that, I guess, leads to my next question, which is about trust in media. We have seen and heard so much about how, you know, there's fake news out there and there's politicians who are undermining people's confidence in the news media, which is obviously an important part of sustaining democracy. So I guess I have two kind of questions: is how do we rebuild trust in media, and how can people know they're consuming news from a trustworthy source?
Well, those are two very good questions, and I'll start with the last one because it's easier. There's a term, media literacy, and right now our media literacy is at fairly low levels, I think, among a lot of people who you would think would know better, but it is hard to distinguish fact from fiction, I think, in large part because of the proliferation of all kinds of media, social media. You don't need a printing press anymore to reach 1 million people. And I think people see it on their screens, and it seems credible because they're seeing it on their screen. But there are some things you can do. Try to trace the information back to its original source. You know, is it a blogger sitting in his basement, or is it a credible news organization that this information originated with? There are numerous sites that you can check. You can fact check online. You can run things through these sites. There's PolitiFact. There's just a lot of them. There's a bunch. Snopes. Mm-hmm. I looked them up before I came, and they're like 10 or 12 that you can fact check on. And I think people should do that. And if it's, you know, and I think part of it, too, is to ask yourself, okay, am I so thrilled with this because it's reinforcing my biases? You know, if it's like, if it does that so strongly to you, just doubt it on its face.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's, you know, look outside your comfort zone, your silo.
And we see studies of this, right? We see studies that people tend to stay in their own silos of their media environment, of their social media feeds, the social network feeds, of their personal networks. We tend to cluster around people who think like us and have the same viewpoints. And we can be really surprised when we hear a different perspective that doesn't jive with our priors. And so I think your point of questioning yourself is a really good one, which is why in this show, right, we've been scrupulously nonpartisan. We talk to people from all different sides of the political aisle, all different perspectives, because that's what democracy requires, right? So let me follow that thought up with a question about democracy today and how the media can help to sustain democracy, given the various threats that we see right now coming out of Washington, coming out of Frankfurt, or just in general.
Well, you know, after the election, when the American people seemed to validate the viewpoint that I am an enemy of the people, that the media is the enemy of the people, that we're a threat to the nation, to the national security, luckily I was so busy for a few days, I didn't really have to process it. But then the weekend came and I sat down and I thought, this is really different. This is profoundly different. What do I do? What do we do now? How do we meet this challenge? How do we deal with this new environment? And all I came up with was we just keep doing what we do. We go out, we find the stories that are important and that matter. We report them using the discipline of journalism, which means we verify what we report. We attribute it. We tell you how we know it. And we fact check ourselves. And then we, you know, hopefully get a really cool photo to go with it and write it nicely and package it and put it out there for people to read. And, you know, I realize we face a really formidable challenge now. And I don't pretend that, you know, one publication based in Frankfort, Kentucky can turn things around for democracy, but we're doing our part. And I think all of us just have to do our part. Those of us who inform have to do that. And people have to make the effort to be informed and participate.
We're speaking with Jamie Luke of the Kentucky Lantern. How do you get more people to visit the site? I mean, you know, and not just the Kentucky Lantern, but any sort of respected news organization, right? You said you're going to keep doing your thing and be, you know, adhere to the ideals of proper journalism, but you need to get people to listen, right? And so what strategies in this brave new world should the media be taking to get more people to listen so they have accurate information?
Well, that's a really good question. And I mean, one thing we do, all media do now, is push our message out on social media, because that is where people get their news now. And we do that. We try to write stories that are compelling for readers. But I think you've put your finger on what the challenge we're all faced with now is. The media ecosystem is so entirely different than it was when I came up through it. Newspapers that measured their circulation in hundreds of thousands of people now measure their circulation in tens of thousands. And, you know, I think sometimes I wonder, was there ever that much appetite for the kind of public affairs, government accountability journalism that we try to do? I mean, we're all about accountability journalism. And, you know, maybe it was just Dear Abby and the sports and the comics that sold all those newspapers. And we were just like the vanity project of publishers. I hate to think that. I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe it's just force of habit for me, but I feel like people do like a good story that exposes corruption or even a problem. I mean, one of the great accomplishments of Kentucky journalism, I think, in the 20th century was the focus on education that really did help produce reforms in public schools and higher ed in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the 2026 midterm elections. Obviously, Kentucky has an open Senate seat that's going to be hotly contested. It's got an open seat for the 6th Congressional District in Lexington, the second largest city. What approach is the Kentucky Lantern and you as a journalist taking, again, in this brave new world, to cover elections and democracy, especially with these big elections coming up?
Well, we go out on the trail with candidates and watch them interact and report what they're telling folks to our readers. We will keep a close eye on campaign finance. It's very important for voters to know who's bankrolling a candidate, and we'll put a priority on that. I think that it's going to be fascinating to see who comes out of the Republican primary, and then it will be really interesting to see if the Democrats can mount any kind of credible challenge mm-hmm. in a midterm that you would think would be favorable to challengers.
And do you see your role as also promoting turnout?
Oh, yes.
And what sorts of things do you, you know, are you thinking about doing for 2026 in promoting people paying attention and actually coming out to vote?
Well, we usually do voter guides in which candidates are given an opportunity to, tell voters their positions on issues. And we, always provide information about, when to register, how to register, when early voting starts, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the localism aspect of the Kentucky Lantern. It seems like every day there's another major story coming out of Washington, D.C. that consumes the public's attention. And I feel like it can be easy to lose importance of the local aspect of the news that actually, has more likely a greater effect on people's lives. So what stories or events are flying under the radar that voters in particular should know about coming out of the Kentucky Lantern's reporting?
Well, you're absolutely right about that. And the stories I love the most are the ones that I can't fit into any kind of category so often I think news stories do in a way fulfill kind of a preconceived narrative. And I just love it when stories come as a complete surprise. But I think there are probably a lot of environmental concerns flying below the radar right now and big choices to be made in terms of energy. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is also very affected by national policy. But Kentucky traditionally has been very loyal to coal, and coal is really certainly not the fuel of the future. So the struggle for Kentucky to advance into modern energy age, that's a big story that we pay attention to. And I think it kind of also flies under the radar.
Mm-hmm. So this show is called Democracy Optimist, and I wonder if you are optimistic in these times about democracy, voting, and elections, which is obviously a huge part of your coverage.
I would have to confess that I am very worried. Mm-hmm. I am very worried about the state of the country. And because of the trust issue you mentioned that you started the show with, it's not just the news media that people don't trust. Few institutions in this country rate high in terms of public confidence. Congress is even below the news media in terms mm-hmm. of that. I was looking at some Gallup stuff before I came, and the only Gallup polls on 19 institutions, a confidence rating, and the only ones that are above halfway mark are the military, science, and small business. And everyone else is, has less than half of the country confident in it. And I just think that, we've been told by losers that the election must be rigged. I really worry that, that voters, young people especially, just feel like either their vote doesn't matter or that they really genuinely do believe that our elections are crooked, which they absolutely are not. There's no evidence of that at all. Voter participation in this country has always been rather low, and I worry about people becoming disenchanted and it becoming even lower. And I worry, too, about voters being intimidated.
So what's the one thing we could do to support the fight for democracy?
Well, I think we have to just lift up our chins, be brave, and be citizens. We have to vote.
And consume respected news media as well.
Well, I think that, I mean, that just is going to make your life better anyway.
Jamie Luke is the editor-in-chief of the Kentucky Lantern, which you can find at KentuckyLantern.com. You can also subscribe to its morning email newsletter called Morning Lantern. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us on Democracy Optimist.
Thanks. I've enjoyed it.
Josh, Jamie Luke talked about the erosion of public trust in news media and how important it is, literally, to a person's well-being to keep your media literacy muscle in shape, to check those sources of information if you're really interested in something. So how can we encourage everybody to do this, just to make it habit?
I think checking twice, thinking twice before you share something on social media, thinking twice before you mention a story about something that, you know, maybe doesn't pass the smell test. I mean, I think we all have a responsibility in sustaining democracy to ensure that we are only spreading truthful information, that we're only getting our information from respected sources, that those sources are verifying the information. So, you know, people often talk about, oh, in a democracy, the number one thing you have to do is vote. And look, I'm a voting rights scholar who is very much about the importance of voting. I'm writing a new book right now in the early stages of research with respect to people who don't vote and why people don't vote. But that's not all that people can do when it comes to sustaining democracy. There's so much more. And voting happens, you know, once every other year. If you only vote in the presidential election, that's every 4 years, right? But there's things we can do every day if we're concerned about sustaining democracy. And ensuring that we are lifting up respected media sources is such an important part of that.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer, I'm the series producer, Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer, Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Eli Raymond and Landon Palmer are our research assistants, Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. We're online at democracyoptimist.com, and podcast versions are available on Apple, Spotify, and the NPR app. Want to get in touch? Our email is democracyoptimist@gmail.com. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Democracy Optimist from Eastern Standard and WEKU.